Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
I think that Congress holds the power of the purse, not Joe Biden, to unilaterally forgive loans.
Senator Lisa Murkowski and her challenger Kelly Chewbacca both say President Biden was wrong to cancel student debt. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, October 11th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the Bering Sea king and snow crab fisheries will be closed this year.
People are really going to have to make some hard calls here on whether that's selling out completely of their quota shares, selling their vessels.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
NEA Alaska is a professional education association representing over 11,000 of Alaska's dedicated public school employees. Their members are united in their commitment to provide an excellent education for every student, regardless of background or zip code. Together, NEA Alaska members work with colleagues, parents, and their communities to build strong public schools that are productive, safe, and welcoming to all. Learn more at neaalaska.org. This message sponsored by NEA Alaska.
U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski and Republican challenger Kelly Chewbacca both say President Biden was wrong to cancel up to $20,000 in student debt for millions of borrowers. Chewbacca called the move unconstitutional.
I think that Congress holds the power of the purse, not Joe Biden, to unilaterally forgive loans. I also think that this is fundamentally unfair for all of those students and families who took out loans and paid them back.
Murkowski said she's empathetic to the debt burden former students have, but said Biden was in the wrong.
I agree with Kelly on this one, that this is an exercise of authority by President Biden that I think is beyond his scope to allow. And I think you're going to see that challenged through the courts here.
They spoke at an Anchorage Chamber of Commerce forum yesterday. Democrat Pat Chesbro was the only Senate candidate to say she favors the debt cancellation. For the first time ever, the Bering Sea snow crab fishery will not open for the upcoming season. Alaska's Department of Fish and Game announced the closure Monday afternoon. The Bristol Bay Red King Crab fishery will also be closed this year for a second year in a row. KMXD's Kirsten Dobrath reports.
Gabriel Prout co-owns the FV Silver Spray with his dad and brothers. The Silver Spray is a 116-foot steel crabber that's home-ported in Kodiak. He says he wasn't surprised that Fish and Game closed the king crab fishery. In a normal year, he'd go out for king crab too. But numbers have been on the decline, and that fishery didn't open last year either.
The real shocking part is the total complete collapse of the snow crab fishery, which no one expected last year when it happened, and now a complete closure this year was equally as shocking.
Miranda Westfall is an area management biologist with Alaska's Department of Fish and Game. She says the sudden decline in snow crab came as a shock to biologists, too. Back in 2018, there was record recruitment in the Bering Sea snow crab stock. Those numbers started to go down in 2019, and there was no survey in 2020 due to the pandemic.
And then in 2021, when they surveyed, we saw the largest decline we've ever seen in the snow crab population, which was very startling, I think, for everyone. It wasn't something we expected. We, you know, were expecting to have this record recruitment come through the population.
The quota was down about 90% from 2020, and this year's numbers were even worse, according to Westfall, prompting the fishery's closure. Westfall says they're not totally sure what caused the snow crab collapse, but they suspect warmer ocean conditions caused by climate change may be partly to blame. 60 or so boats normally go out for Bering Sea snow crab, according to Westfall. Prout, the Kodiak fisherman, says a deckhand might make $50,000 to $80,000 in a good year, and the ex-vessel value for one boat is more than $1 million. There is a small tanner crab fishery slated to open later this month in the Bering Sea. Prout says that's a Band-Aid, though.
It really has been in the past a kind of a bonus when you have to fish that alongside the snow crab. But seeing as there's no snow crab this year with a closure, We're contemplating whether or not we should even make the trip out west with the high fuel prices.
He estimates that right now it costs about $100,000 in fuel round trip to make it to the Bering Sea fishing grounds. The price of steel needed to maintain the Silver Spray's more than 200 crab pots has also jumped. He and his family are still waiting on fishery disaster payments to come through from the federal government for past poor seasons and closures. Prout says his family tenders in Prince William Sound during the summers. They're already eyeing that season to make up some of the financial loss from the crab closure, but others won't have many options.
People are really going to have to make some hard calls here on whether that's selling out completely of their quota shares, selling their vessels, looking for other opportunities in other fishing sectors, which are few and far between. Fishermen are really going to be hurting the next year.
Meanwhile, Westfall says there could be more declines in the number of snow crabs over the next few years before the population starts to rebound. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
By an extremely narrow margin, Bethel voters have officially voted to amend the city code to prohibit the city council from enacting future mask mandates. KYUK's Nina Kravinsky has more.
The vote passed by only a 22-vote margin. This measure means the city is prohibited from requiring people to wear masks in public places. Bethel resident John Wallace voted against the measure. He explained why outside his polling place at the Cultural Center on Tuesday.
To not have the ability to protect, I don't think I want to take that away from the folks that are spending the time to know what's supposed to be going on.
Bethel resident Patrick Snow sponsored the petition to get the question on the ballot. He says he was responding to people in the community who were asking for this change.
I felt that the people that were responsible enough to make those decisions for themselves.
In the same election, Snow was voted onto city council this week. In Bethel, I'm Nina Kravinsky.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Fat Bear Week superfan tracking this year's tournament.
You just look at two pictures of bears and you're determining which one is chonkier. Like, it's just wonderful. It's delightful.
Chonky Bears coming up. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Western Interior Alaska Subsistence Regional Advisory Council invites public participation at a meeting to discuss fisheries closure reviews, proposals to change federal subsistence fish and shellfish regulations, and other subsistence-related issues on October 19th and 20th in Fairbanks. More at 800-478-1456 or doi.gov/subsistence/regions. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
The University of Alaska Fairbanks is advancing a technique that enables production of more viscous North Slope oil reservoirs. During a press conference put on by Governor Mike Dunleavy Friday, UAF Department of Petroleum Engineering Professor Abhijit Dandekar explained the technology, which involves injecting a mix of water and polymer powder into viscous oil reservoirs.
We have proven that, yes, it works for an oil which is low viscosity, kind of like maple syrup, so we can actually sweep that oil.
UAF developed the technology with U.S. Department of Energy funding and partners with Hillcorp to test it on the North Slope. Hillcorp Prudhoe Bay manager Jill Fisk said production from project wells at the Milne Point unit has tripled since they began injecting polymer 3 years ago.
Instead of the predicted rate of about 300 barrels of oil per day if we weren't injecting polymer, these wells now produce about 900 barrels of oil per day with the polymer injection.
Fisk noted that the production enhancement requires a relatively small amount of polymer.
Less than 2 pounds of polymer for each extra barrel of oil that we were able to produce, which is the best polymer utilization performance reported in the world.
Fisk said the polymer technique is being used to enhance production at 30 wells with more in the works. The next challenge for the UAF Hillcorp project is developing a polymer technique that works on deeper, larger reserves of even more viscous or heavy oil. Professor Dandekar says they have a solution,
which we call polymer alternating solvent, but there are lots of challenges involved in that, moving parts, and that's the focus of our research.
The U.S. Department of Energy is no longer funding the UAF project, but the state of Alaska stepped in with $5 million for the heavy oil research. a timber company run by Yakutat's Village Corporation is dissolving. Yak Timber was created 4 years ago to harvest 21 million board feet of land owned by Yaktatquan Inc. The logging subsidiary has since harvested about three-quarters of that and shipped it to China, according to its website. As Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports, Yak Timber is shutting down after pushback from shareholders on a proposal to log an important island just outside of town.
Yak Timber's logging has been controversial in Yakutat, a village of about 600 people in the Gulf of Alaska. As a subsidiary company, it's supposed to extract value from corporation land holdings to fund dividends for shareholders. But Yakutat's tribal and municipal governments, plus a significant number of shareholders, have spoken out against past clear cuts that they feared would damage salmon habitat and endanger their way of life. More recently, Yak Timber has faced backlash over a proposal to log corporation land on nearby Kantak Island.
Kantak is considered a barrier island for our community.
Mary Knudsen is the cultural heritage director for Yakutat's tribe.
It literally sits right in front of town and blocks all of the harsh storms that come off the Gulf of Alaska. And so it prevents us from having high-speed winds and, you know, it protects from tsunamis.
Yak Timber planned to log the island by thinning rather than clear-cutting, picking specific trees and leaving most of the forest intact. In a letter to shareholders, parent company Yaktatquan Incorporated says the decision to log the island was made in the community's best interest. The corporation says it had hoped to use the revenue from the timber harvest to fund new business ventures and help community members build homes. But that was still too much for many. Knudsen says besides the island being important geographically, it's culturally significant.
Before we had the practice of burying people in one specific location, we would also cremate them, which would then make the trees culturally modified trees, right? So we haven't been able to do enough exploration over there as the tribe to be able to say where all of specific locations could be.
None of the streams that are over there are cataloged by the state currently, so they don't have anadromous protection.
That's Hava Roloff, the tribe's fisheries biologist who has been hiking around Kantak. She says even though state biologists haven't recorded ocean-going fish in the streams, they're perfect for coho salmon.
It's all ideal coho habitat. It just screams coho habitat. So that's my goal right now, is just kind of mapping the whole stream network out there and making sure that if coho are utilizing those streams, that they're documented and that they'll be protected.
Yaktatquan cites opposition to the Kantak logging operation as its reason for shutting down. With debts coming due and no viable source of revenue, the corporation's board says it was left with no choice but to dissolve Yak Timber and sell its assets. Yak Timber and Yaktatquan Incorporated did not respond to requests for comment. But some shareholders say they're not to blame for Yak Timber's shutting its doors.
If you read the fine print, that's what it sounds like, is it's our fault that we didn't let them go do this.
Jason Jensen is a shareholder descendant who worked for a company that Yak Timber contracted to load its timber onto ships.
Pretty much all the shareholders here have the same mindset, that it sounds like they're trying to pass the blame on the shareholders for them not being a successful business venture.
Jensen says shareholders weren't privy to the corporation's finances, and there's been a problem with transparency. Meanwhile, he says the timber company set itself up for failure by taking out loans, acquiring equipment, and getting into more debt without communicating with shareholders.
It just seemed like every step of the way there was a roadblock. There was something, canceled meetings, canceled elections, and nonstop stuff in the road to block the shareholders from getting the information that they wanted. And so at some point in time, the number came out that there was like $14 million in loans. And the collateral was land that the shareholders never agreed to give up.
Yaktatquan says the company plans to sell all of Yak Timber's equipment and assets at an auction in Seattle in the coming months. Reporting in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Childcare shortages are widespread in remote southeast Alaska. Earlier this month, a community coalition in Petersburg held a forum about childcare shortages in town. Panel members talked about why the shortage is a problem for the whole community. KFSK's Rachel Cassandra has more.
Community wellness specialist Becky Turland moderated a panel in the school auditorium. The aim was to highlight Petersburg's childcare shortage as a community issue, not just an issue for parents. At the event, SHARE released data from their 2021 Petersburg Child Care Needs Survey. They received a little over 100 responses to their survey. About a third were child care workers, and two-thirds were parents and caregivers. According to the survey, 44% of parents and caregivers currently don't work because of a lack of child care. Jim Floyd is on the Petersburg Planning Commission. He runs Hammer and Weekend grocery and hardware stores. He says childcare affects his many employees.
Groceries are essential, but we can't provide essential services because we don't have our workforce.
Petersburg has a limited pool of potential childcare employees, and childcare centers have trouble retaining them. Over 2 years, the survey found an 81% turnover rate for childcare workers. The top reasons listed were pay, work environment, and lack of benefits. According to the survey, the average hourly pay for childcare workers is $12.72. That's well below the living wage. According to data from MIT, a living wage in Alaska for people without children is $16.72 an hour. Cami Gillen urged people in Petersburg to reframe their understanding of childcare workers.
Instead of thinking of them as babysitters, as they are teachers, they are professionals.
Turlin asked panelists why they think early education for ages 0 to 4 doesn't get state or local funding. Rachel Etcher is a school counselor in Petersburg. She said it harkens back to older family structures.
We used to have families be able to be supported on one income, and that is not reality for the majority of people.
Turlin pointed out that the shortage is even harder on single parents.
I know I'm a single parent, and when my children were in there, I relied on it heavily, and it was a struggle to pay for childcare and pay for all the bills at home as well.
Katie Homeland is vice president of the Petersburg School Board. Homeland is one of the members on Petersburg's Early Childhood Education Task Force. That's a new borough-run volunteer group addressing the local childcare shortage. She said that solutions may look different from what people expect.
Re-envisioning some use of spaces and program structures as well. And Petersburg sometimes is a place where, oh, this is how we've always done things. It's not working right now for childcare.
Turlin urged people to see childcare as a way to shape the future of Petersburg. Reporting in Petersburg, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, proud of its ties to Alaska communities since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com. If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Yesterday was Indigenous Peoples Day. Tribes and Alaska Native organizations across Alaska are sponsoring efforts to revitalize endangered Native languages like Dena'ina. And this month, the Kenaitse Indian tribe on the Kenai Peninsula is holding 2 days of virtual workshops for early Dena'ina language learners over Zoom. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
Learning any language can be intimidating at the outset. Workshop instructor Will Norton says sometimes getting started is the hardest part.
You know, although this course really is just the basics, what we're trying to do is give people a platform to really start learning and to go as far as they want to, you know.
The Kenaitse Indian tribe received a 2-year federal grant to hold free Dena'ina language workshops for beginners. The series is part of a mosaic of language revitalization work from the tribe. It recently launched a virtual Dena'ina audio dictionary online and is continuing to offer language courses for adults through Kenai Peninsula College, as well as language lessons for kids at its new educational campus in Kenai.
There's kind of a gap in terms of classes for adults who aren't necessarily interested or able to take a college course for a full semester. So we're trying to meet that gap with these classes.
This is the second of 3 community language workshops through the federal grant. The first was in person, but Norton says the community wanted a virtual one, too. He'll brief attendees on basic greetings, introductions, and vocabulary.
It's not the sort of thing where you have to become fluent. You know, that takes a lot of work and a lot of time, and of course we encourage anybody who wants to do it.
But he says even learning a phrase here and there can be valuable for Dena'ina people and others who live on Dena'ina land.
It's still important to know at least a little bit of the language of the place where you live.
The Dena'ina Language Workshop is October 25th and 27th from 5 to 6:30 p.m. The workshop is free and will be fully remote over Zoom. To register, email Norton at wnorton@kinaitse.org. That's wnorton@kinaitse.org. He says if the workshop is successful, they'll continue some longer-term offerings as well. He says they're already planning workshops that will cover advanced grammar, as well as vocabulary related to the Native Youth Olympics in March. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Juneau-based Tlingit artist Arius Hoyle released a music video Friday featuring students from Nanwalik, a predominantly Aleutic village on the southern tip of the Kenai Peninsula that's only accessible by air and water. Hoyle, known by his stage name Air Jazz, traveled to the community to film the video in September as part of a residency with the Bunnell Street Arts Center. KBBI's Hope McKinney reports. Will you escape Gankridge?
Regain your native language. Regain your native language. That's Air Jazz's new song, You're the North Star. The music video features kids in Nanwalik kayaking, dancing, and playing basketball. Arius Hoyle, the man behind the stage name, is a hip-hop recording artist who became involved with the Bunnell Street Arts Center back in 2019, shortly before the onset of the coronavirus pandemic. He recently produced an album entitled Last Chance Chilkat, done on behalf of the First Peoples of Alaska.
I oftentimes combine my indigenous language, the Tlingit, from my people, with rap and hip-hop music. So I really like to do projects that are inclusive of indigenous people, especially around Alaska. And I really like to manifest both my Tlingit side and my African American side into music. So essentially, I make Afro-Indigenous hip-hop.
Hoyle performed in Nanwalik 3 years ago as the community was experiencing a severe drought. Asia Freeman, artistic director at the Bunnell Street Arts Center, says Hoyle asked if he could teach his song You're the North Star through an artist in schools program, which places professional artists in K-12 classrooms throughout the Kenai Peninsula School District.
A few years back, we had brought Arius with the Indigenous Roadshow to Nanwalik, and the village just adored him and basically invited him back.
So last month, Hoyle and a videographer out of Anchorage traveled across Kachemak Bay to capture videos of K-12 students in the small community.
Day by day, we mapped out all of these locations and all of these sports that we wanted the students to be a part of. And then we rolled the camera, had them do all types of activities at their school in the middle of class. And we tried to capture as many as possible.
He says they wanted to focus on everyday activities in the village.
It ranged from the kids doing four-wheeling on their four-wheelers they had in the village, to them playing basketball, to them making arts and crafts, such as a banner. And we got all of that on camera for the 1 week I was there.
Hoyle says the song and video are dedicated to Nanwalik. His hope for You're the North Star is to acknowledge and inspire the youth of small villages. Major efforts to revitalize Indigenous cultures, languages, and ways of life have taken root in recent years. Hoyle sees his music as part of that.
When it comes to music, something that pretty much everybody enjoys, it's a more accessible way to revitalize your people. Because you're taking something, an art style that everyone appreciates, and you're doing your own indigenous twist on the music. And when it comes to me representing the Black community as much as the Tlingit community, that's why I chose rap music, because I think hip hop and rap is so expressive and it's so fun, yet it still has a lot of representation of who I am. I love to rhyme. and I love to sing in my native tongue.
You can find Hoyle's music on iTunes, Apple Music, Spotify, and YouTube under the name Air Jazz. In Homer, I'm Hope McKenna. You're the North Star, higher than the pulsar,
fire in your cold heart. All right, this just in, Bear 747 is the winner of this year's Fat Bear Week contest. He's an adult male who was also the champion in 2020, and according to the Katmai National Park and Preserve, he fished at Brooks Falls almost every day between late June and mid-September. And Fat Bear Week has been more popular than ever this year, with people around the world voting on the park's biggest brown bear. It's gotten so popular that the state's largest newspaper hired a writer just to cover the tournament. KDLG's Izzy Ross has more.
Juneau-based writer Christy Nami Erickson is a self-described superfan of the fat bears in Katmai National Park.
You just look at two pictures of bears and you're determining which one is chonkier. Like, it's just wonderful. It's delightful.
She started following Fat Bear Week in 2020 during the pandemic. This month, she poured that knowledge into daily reports tracking the tournament's big brown bears for the Anchorage Daily News. Watching the bears provides relief and comfort, not just in the pandemic, but in everyday life. Erickson is a poet, and she takes her inspiration from the natural world.
As I learned more about the bears, I thought there were so many really wonderful stories that could be told about them. As a writer, I'm most interested in how can that connect back to my own experience of what it's like to be a person in this world.
Each bear has a story. And Erickson examines some profound experiences. In one report, Erickson traces how Bear 435 Holly adopted an abandoned cub years after one of her own died.
What values does Holly represent that other people might get behind?
She also has questions about other bears.
What lessons can I learn from Otis? You know, why don't we like 856? What does that say about us as humans in community with each other that we don't appreciate bears who pick on smaller bears? You know, so I use them as a large metaphor to really talk about us humans.
Erickson's updates are like reading a long text from a friend. Erickson says her writing is lighthearted because it's influenced by the social media accounts of Katmai National Park. She says it's become some of her favorite American writing.
It's a master class, honestly, that I'm taking just by following their social media. I've seen alliterations up to like 9 or 10 words in a sentence from them, and it's truly inspiring.
Even after the fattest bear is crowned, Erickson will still be scanning the bear cams for months to come.
I'm a year-round fat bear weeker. I'm a fat bear yearer, and I feel like I've, you know, gotten to know a lot more about the bears over the years.
Erickson hopes writing about the bears will also help us discover a little more about ourselves. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
All right, that's it for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Anchorage, Kirsten Dobrath in Kodiak, Nina Kravinsky in Bethel, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Angela Denning and Rachel Cassandra in Petersburg, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, Hope McKinney in Homer, and Izzy Ross in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
And by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.